Okay, a question was raised last week, and quickly, but I'd like to elaborate a little more on it. It was a very, very important question. Question was raised. This is a question. The question is, the Ben Noach, is the Ben Noach obligated to keep those seven laws due to Sinai, or is it due to the covenant that was given to Noah from God? Okay, that's the question. That's a very good question. Now, someone asked me last week, I believe, did God reinstate the seven laws? And I said, yes. In a sense, that is true. In a sense, it's not true. In a sense, it's true because, yes, the seven laws at Sinai were reinstated. But the question that I'm asking now, I don't know if the questioner meant this or I'm just elaborating on this point, but it's, the question should be brought out into the open. Anyways, the question is, what obligates the Ben Noah? In other words, is it because God spoke to Noah that he's obligated, or is he obligated because of the event at Sinai where the Torah was given? Okay. Now you ask me, well, what's the difference if it's from Sinai or if it's from Noah? Well, first of all, it's important that we should know what is the obligating factor. It's important we should have a knowledge and understanding of it. That's number one. But two, there is really a practical difference. I'll get into the practical difference in a moment. But the answer to the question is, it is definitely Sinai. There is no question about it. In other words, the Ben Noah is obligated to keep the commandments, to keep the seven, okay, and he has a potentiality to fulfill others on a voluntary basis. This is all due to Sinai. It's not due to the fact that to Noah, even though it's true that God did give these commandments to Noah, but at Sinai, the whole system was the final structure of the system, okay? All right, now I'll explain why that has to be that way. The reason why that has to be that way is very simple, because before Sinai it says that you will be to me a nation, a kingdom of priests, okay? And it also says in the prophets, for from Zion Torah shall come forth. So once the whole Torah was given at Sinai with all the intricate laws and details, and this was given over to the children of Israel, that this is their responsibility. So all the seven laws, everything, the whole system was given to them. So that is their responsibility. And they are the ones that are to interpret the law, because there's only one law. They're the ones to interpret the law, and the interpretation of the law and the guarding of the law is given over to Israel. And that means the entire law, including the laws of the seven laws of Noah. So there was never any entrusting, separate entrusting. After that point, everything was entrusted to the children of Israel. They're the kingdom of priests. Now, priests means that there's a laity. The laity is the rest of the world. So that means that the children of Israel now were charged at Sinai with the responsibility for the entire. And again, it's a verse in Psalms as well, where it says that he speaks his words to Jacob. Let me just find out where that is. Hold on 1 second. Okay, that's a verse in. Give me 1 second. It's in Psalms 147:19. Okay. Okay, it says he speaks his words to Jacob, his laws and statutes to Israel. All right? He did not do so to any other nation, and he did not teach them the statutes. So this means that the statutes, the obligation to know, to be in charge of all the details of the statutes and the laws, and of course, as you know, I mean, you're more educated than the average Ben Noah, who thinks that these are just, you know, just seven simple laws. You know that these laws are extremely intricate, complex, and they require a deep understanding analysis. And the ones that were charged with that, as the priestly nation, which means to say that they're responsible to others, to the entire world, that was Israel. So at Sinai, Israel was charged with the with keeping, guarding the knowledge of the law and disseminating this law. So that's why once Sinai took place, so then everything starts from that point. The whole system for the world was set up at Sinai. That was the final setting up of the system for the entire world. That's why everything stems from Sinai. So even though it is true that Noah was charged with the seven laws from the time of Noah, question is whether it's from the time of Adam or not. Okay, that's what we're going through right now in the tractate of Sanhedrin. But at any rate, from Noah, from the time of Noah on, there's no question about it that that the seven laws were given. Were given to Noah. Nobody argues on that point. Now, you'll ask me what difference does it make. I mentioned before there would be a difference. Whether the Ben Noah was obligated because of the covenant with Noah or whether he was obligated because of the covenant at Sinai. The difference would be, one. There's one that would make the difference, and that is in Genesis 9:7. Okay? Genesis 9:7, it says, "And you," speaking to Noah and his children, "be fruitful and multiply, and you shall be productive in the fruitful in the land and multiply in it." Okay? So so there you have a commandment to engage in reproduction. All right? Now, if you'll notice, you see, there is no repetition in the Torah. That's one of the basic principles. You take a look at 9:1. It says that God blessed Noah and his children, and he said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Okay? So why the repetition in verse 7? The answer is, if you look carefully at the Bible, you'll figure out the answer yourself. The answer is that in verse 1, it says God blessed Noah and his children. But in verse 7, he says, "And now you be fruitful and multiply." So they're two different. It's in two different. First one is simply a blessing of God that they should have the ability to be productive, and the second one is a commandment. There's a difference between a blessing and a commandment. Blessing is where God gives man an opportunity to do something, and a command is something different. A command is where he must abide by it. So since there is no repetition in the Torah, it's clear that the first statement is a blessing, and the second one is a commandment. Now, that would be the sole difference, actually, between whether or not the Ben Noah would be bound by the event that took place in the time of Noah or by the universal event at Sinai. Okay, the difference would be, is the Ben Noah obligated in the, does he come under the mandate of having children and multiplying? That law is that the law of having means that one must reproduce, have a son and a daughter. That is the obligation of that mitzvah. The question is a Ben Noah obligated to do so? Now, it's clear from the Torah that the original Bnei Noah, in other words, when God spoke to Noah and his children, they were obligated to do so. They had this obligation. But now what happens is, since the Ben Noah really is bound not by the first covenant that God made with Noah, but he's bound like everyone is with Sinai, that supersedes the previous covenant, because that's the ultimate formulation of the law. There is no difference with regard to the other laws, but this one is different. In other words, since the Ben Noah is bound by Sinai, he was relieved of the obligation to multiply. That obligation he does not have anymore. That only exists until Sinai. Okay? However, were he bound by the covenant with Noah, if that was what was binding, then, of course, he would still have that obligation to be productive and to multiply. Okay? But, in fact, the Talmud states that he does not have that that obligation. All right? So, therefore, it does. There is a practical difference, and also there is, of course, a theoretical difference, because it means that the system, when God gave the law at Sinai, it wasn't just for the Jewish people, it was for the entire world. So the Sinaitic event was one that was universal, and it placed the people of Israel in a position of responsibility insofar as the whole law is concerned. So therefore, the Ben Noah has to come under the obligations, the whole system that was created at Sinai, which was not just for Israel, as I said, but for the entire world. That is the formulation of the Talmud, without a doubt, that the Ben Noah harks back to Sinai, just like the Ben Israel does. There is no difference on that score. Maimonides states that a Ben Noah is obligated because of Sinai, and he says the Ben Noah should know that that this is the source of his obligation, is the Sinai, the event of Sinai. But he should also know that the fact that these laws that were given at Sinai, that Noah and his children were also previously instructed and commanded to do them. But the obligating event is really between Noah and between God. There is also another clear reason why this is so. If you remember, in the Bible we have the story of Simon and Levi, and that they wiped out the city of Shechem. And of course, the question is, what right did they have to do so? They were B'nai Noach. They had the status of B'nai Noach. So what right did they have to kill the people of Shechem? Sechem, I think, I believe in English it's pronounced. Let me just quote you the verse of Maimonides for a second, okay? The verse of Maimonides, the statement of Maimonides, Maimonides is like this. He says, anyone who accepts the seven laws and is careful to do them is considered from the righteous of the nations of the world, and he has a place in the world to come. And he says, and that is if he accepts them upon himself, and he does them because God commanded these laws in the Torah. And he taught us through Moses, our teacher, that the sons of Noah from before were commanded to do them. Okay? So therefore, it is clear in my mind, states it quite clearly, that the obligation of the Ben Noah is the Sinai. Now, I'm going to tell you another reason why the obligation has to be Sinai. Is that it's an important reason. You see, the question was why, let me get back to Simon and Levi, that they wiped out, they destroyed the city of Shechem. What right did they have to do? So the answer is because the people of Shechem violated the seven laws. They were in violation of kidnapping, because they kidnapped Dinah. And they kidnapped Dinah, and the whole town, the whole city stood by and didn't object to this. And you know that the one of the seven laws is that the Ben Noach, the community, is not permitted to allow the disintegration of society through violation of these laws. And they stood by, so they were obligated as well. And that's why they were deserving death. That's the opinion of Maimonides. Nachmanides has a different opinion. He says because they were idolaters. But regardless. I'm not really going to go into that issue right now. It doesn't make any difference. The point I want to bring out is the following, that a Ben Noach, the question is, when I mentioned this before, that when the people of Israel would conquer a nation, so they would always offer them first peace and give them the opportunity to accept the seven laws. By the way, the conquest was always done in a very humane way. As a matter of fact, when they would surround the city, they always had to leave one side open. They're only allowed to surround the city on three sides. So anyone that wishes to escape for their life has a way out. There was never a kind of war where they simply surrounded the entire city, as is done in modern warfare or ancient warfare, and not to allow anyone to escape. They always allowed people to have an out. And also, they always asked them first if they would be at peace with them. This is, according to Maimonides, even the seven nations were in the land of Israel itself. But they would first ask them if they would accept the seven laws. So then everything would be fine. So the question, of course, is or simply if a Ben Noach, let's say for instance the case of Ger Toshav. Ger Toshav means that a Ben Noach comes and in the land of Israel, and he wants to be a halachic neighbor, which means he's actually becoming a part of the group insofar as living in the land is concerned. And in that case, if he accepts he has to accept the seven laws upon himself. But of course, the question is, and we know that if one violates the seven laws, they're under the penalty of death. So the question is an obvious one. How could you accept a person to be a Ben Noach, but they weren't keeping these laws previously? So since they weren't keeping the laws previously, why aren't they deserving of death immediately? Okay? Now, the answer is based upon what we are explaining now. And that is the difference between the obligating factor and the difference between Shechem and between after the Torah was given. The B'nai Noach, before the Torah was given, were obligated by the event of the covenant between God and Noah. And that covenant obligated them to keep the laws, and there was a tradition from the time of Noah concerning those laws all the way till the time of the Torah, okay, till the time of Sinai. And that's why there was no excuse for them not to do it. That was their obligation. But once Sinai came into the picture, now Sinai becomes the obligating factor, and with Sinai being the obligating factor, there is no more tradition from Noah. Therefore, anyone that is unaware, the obligation is upon the people of Israel to instruct and to teach the laws of the Torah that were given at Sinai. So therefore, anyone that is met, the obligation is upon the Jew to instruct them and teach them about the laws first. They don't have any prior obligation on their own, going back to Noah. That has been abrogated, because God knew that that tradition wouldn't last forever. So what obligates the Ben Noah is the event at Sinai, and it's the same obligating factor for the Jew. It's a very important concept, because it means that we accept nothing other than the event at Sinai with all its magnitude.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I need to jump in right here for a moment, if I may. There are two or three things I would agree with you, your conclusions up to this point, except for one point on this. I think that at Sinai that we have, and I will use the word codification of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach, with the various ramifications. But I would say that the Noahic covenant is still in effect regardless of Sinai, because God said the seal of the Noahic covenant would be the rainbow.
Okay, let me explain that.
Okay, and then, all right, that's one point.
Okay, yeah.
Then two, when we come to Deuteronomy 32, and I can give you several other verses, but this one, it says, when the Most High divided to the nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of Adam. See, at this point, we are all still the sons of Adam. He set boundaries of the people according to the numbers of the children of Israel.
Right.
This verse here makes them B'nai Noach and B'nai Israel.
As far as
inheritance is concerned.
That's right.
And then you drop over to chapter 33 and verse 4 and says, Moses commanded us a Torah, even an inheritance for the congregation of Jacob.
Right.
Now, what I see in this, and again, I'm in agreement with everything you're saying, basically, except for this one point, that the Noahic covenant is still valid, but we must come to Sinai in order to find the ramifications of it. All right, another point that I would make, God made the covenant with Adam.
Right.
And, of course, the Edenic covenant. And that if Adam ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
That was a commandment, not a covenant.
All right, it was a commandment, but it's still all involved in the Edenic covenant.
Well, you can call it a covenant, but a covenant is always something which is everlasting. A covenant is not just a commandment to one person.
All right,
that wasn't really lasting. That was only on him.
All right, I think it goes to all mankind because since Adam died, everybody else dies.
Yeah, but I know.
So the ramification of it is still.
Yeah, but there's no prohibition to eat from any tree. That prohibition, which was the essence of that commandment, was abrogated. It was only a temporary commandment for.
All right, but the results of that covenant still in effect.
Well, yeah, but that's not the covenant anymore. The covenant is always a living, existing bond, which means you're bound to do something, and there's nothing that we have to do anymore because of the case of Eden. It's gone. We suffer the effects, that's true, but that's not something we have to do. A covenant always means you have to do something.
Will the curse of death not be removed either during the age of the Mashiach or after that?
We have nothing to do. In other words, the commandment, the doing part was only Adam. There's nothing that we have to do. There's no more prohibition against eating from the tree.
All right, but see, we
have a question of whether, according to Maimonides and the great group of scholars, no.
All right, but we said
death will never cease.
All right, but the point we'll make during the conference, you said, and we've been taught that Adam had five of the Sheva Mitzvah, or some say six.
Well, we're going to get into that.
Okay, all right, but that's the only the point that I would make is with the rainbow, the covenant is still in effect, but at Sinai, the covenant is defined. More distinctly, we don't have all the do's and don'ts till Sinai. So that's the only point I'm making.
What you're saying is that if you want to know what happened, you have to go to Sinai.
That's correct.
Right.
That's exactly correct.
But the actual obligation goes back to Noah.
That's correct.
I understand your position.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that position is illogical, but I'm just saying that it is a logical possibility. But I'm just saying that the Talmudic scholars outrule it because of the fact that, and this would be a halachic difference. A halachic difference would be, is the Ben Noah obligated in reproduction? Okay? We'll get into that in a moment. But the question that you did raise against the Talmudic position, both positions make sense. I understand that. You can understand them both ways. But the oral law maintains that it's the other way. In other words, the obligation always goes back to sign. I'm going to get into a little bit why that should be that way. But I'm not saying your position is illogical, but the question you raise is a good one. You see, whenever God says forever and ever, it cannot be abrogated by Sinai. That's why the covenant, for instance, of the that we spoke about last week, the covenant of the circumcision. Over there it says, you and your children forever, forever. So therefore, whenever your children for generations, eternally, then Sinai doesn't remove it. Now, with regard to Noah and his children, the commandments that he received when he came out of the ark, it does not say forever. But it does say forever with regard to the rainbow. That's where it says, that's where it says forever. It says in verse 9, I will establish my covenant with you and for your children after you. That means... eternally. Therefore, the covenant with regard to the rainbow, okay, it says there will never ever be a flood. That's forever, okay? There's two parts to the covenant between God and Noah. the covenant, insofar as the rainbow is concerned, that is forever. That God will never destroy the world through flood again. Okay? So this is that part is forever. But the specific commandments, the Talmud says, the Orlo says, was not forever. Now let me just elaborate as to why this is so. You see, the part of our belief system, and this is an important thing, part of our belief system is that we are not permitted to accept certain evidence as, or so-called evidence, as or be, as being true, to believe, in other words, certain things. We are not permitted, our belief system is not permitted to be is not permitted to be guided by just any kind of belief. In other words, if you have even a prophet, we aren't guided by that belief system. As you know very well, in Deuteronomy, if the prophet gives signs, even if the signs come into existence, come to be, we are not permitted to follow the signs of that prophet if he states something other than what was what we know from Sinai. So Sinai is the only thing that we are, only in the event of Sinai do we give credibility to. In other words, even if a prophet would arise and he'd say, look, I am telling you from God, he'd give a sign, and he'd say, and the sign would come true. And he would say, now I'm telling you, God tells you do something other than you have in the five books of Moses. We are not permitted to follow that person. Okay? Why? Because our belief system is only, we are only to believe an event which took place in front of millions of people, a public event, and an event of the enormity and magnitude of the Sinaitic event. That's the only thing we're allowed to believe. In other words, the only way it would be possible for something to change in the Torah would be to have another revelation, just like we had at Sinai, and then God would say to us that the previous that Sinai is all the laws of Sinai have been abrogated. But of course, such a thing will not happen because God stated at Sinai that there will never be another Sinai. But I'm just telling you theoretically that would be the only possibility of because we're only permitted to believe something of the magnitude of Sinai. That is a part of our faith, Ben Israel and Ben Noah. So the Sinaitic event was really an event that established what our guidelines should be for credit. And this is the only kind of event that we are permitted to give credibility to. Nothing else. Therefore, this concept is binding on a Ben Noah just as it is on a Ben Israel. As a matter of fact, the entire veracity, verification of the Torah is based on the fact that the event took place in front of the entire people. That is the entire verification of the Torah. So therefore, the Ben Noah has to be guided by such a verification just as much as the Ben Israel. So for that reason alone, it's necessary that all be committed to the Sinai event. That is the evidence and that is the proof. As it says in Exodus, where God said to Moses that I'm going to come to you in the thickness of a cloud in order to self known, and that the people will know that the words that I'm giving are the true, to you are the true words of God.